Capes and Crux, a superhero RPG utilizing core 5th edition rules with a unique twist. Take on the role of your own superhero or villain. Completely customizable origins, powers, and enhancements. Utilize advanced technology to aid in your mission. Join us in Cobalt City and the ultra-modern world of Terra. Dive into the political intrigue and chaos of a world still adjusting to superpowered citizens. In a world where what is right and what is the law often conflict, how will you choose to use your powers and conceal your identity? Capes and Crooks is a complete RPG game with everything you need to create a super experience sure to delight your players. Includes over 300 pages of content with full color illustrations. There will always be good and evil, light and dark. There will always be Capes and Crooks. Now live on Kickstarter, please become a backer today and share with your friends.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
We want to thank you guys for joining us here today at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Your roles are like a spell with no alternative uses.
Yeah, that's usually just lack of imagination, I think.
Yeah, Although I think it goes hand in hand with player and DM, because the player's like, well, use it like this, and DM has to be like, I guess I could allow it.
Oh, for sure. So I'm really excited for today's show. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the top 5 alternative ways to use Dungeons & Dragons spells. There are hundreds and hundreds of spells. We've narrowed our list down to just a few. It is worth noting that we did take inspiration from the project or the article from cbr.com, so you can find the link in the show notes at critacademy.com/post/episode223. We're going to give our own thoughts on how these work and see if we agree, and plus we have a honorable mention section of our own ideas. But before all that, I want to take a moment to let you all know our next Kickstarter launches on Tuesday, June 29th. Yay! Woo-hoo! Capes and Crooks, a 5th edition superhero RPG. It utilizes the core rules of the world's greatest role-playing game, and we add our own unique twist. You'll be able to take on the role of a superhero, or villain if you prefer, and completely customize your character with unique origins, roles, powers, and alter egos. Additionally, we've done away with the subclass system. Favor of an a la carte pick your own powers concept. And best of all, your at-will powers evolve as your character gets stronger. It is so exciting.
It's pretty awesome.
We've spent the weekend pushing out for press kits and promo stuff, so we've been getting a lot of good feedback, so I'm really excited for how this is going. If you're interested in following along, please head on over to critacademy.com/capesandcrooks for more information. You can also get notified when we go live. If you are planning on supporting the Kickstarter, please consider dropping a dollar or whatever it is the day it launches, because the algorithms care more about number of backers in that first 24, 48 hours than value, right? So even if you just back for a dollar and plan to add more later, that's great. I also want to give a quick once over to let everyone know that our Memorable Monsters, all our books have been shipped to our backers from our last Kickstarter, and that'll be going live on 6/18 as well. So, we're really excited for this. So, I think, that'll do it. Before we move on to our main topic, we like to start off every episode by giving away fat loots to our wonderful audience.
As always, because giving away fat loots is amazing. But for right now, our RPG Fat Loot giveaway is God Dream from DM Conclave. Now, this one actually sounds pretty interesting to me because it talks about a person that you might have heard, but maybe you don't have an idea of what they really are, what they do. So, Ao, or Ao, depends on your interpretation, on how you say it, the Overgod, the hidden slumbers, and the worlds are turned asunder. Within the God Dream, the players have to travel to the Overgod's body, mind, and soul demiplanes, respectively, and find a way to awaken it from its slumber. Should they succeed in their endeavors... Is it Ao?
I don't know.
It was the first time you said it, so yes.
Ao. Will be awakened, Ao. And a new timeline will be created, as it has been done time and time again. Well, the heroes managed to save all of creation from falling into oblivion. This sounds like a high-level campaign. and our winner today is Loy Jeff 1994. Congratulations! But don't worry if you didn't win. You can always head over to critacademy.com and subscribe your chance to win. It's free. It's easy.
Yes.
Just do it.
Yeah. And as I've said before, our items or our giveaways are revolving right now. So you have the chance to win multiple different things. So awesome.
Yeah.
Now on to the main topic. While everyone is here, we're going to be talking the top five alternative ways to use Dungeons and Dragons and spells. Now, let's be honest. There are a lot of spells in D&D. And this is only an opinion. So you may or may not agree with it, but we're going to give you this list anyway. I'll go first. Our number five is an easy meal with the sleep spell.
Yep.
When adventuring the wilderness, the characters have to eat, though I do realize that some people don't actually deal with this. But if you're more of the post-apocalyptic, great, this will fit perfectly. Sometimes this means they have to go out hunting or fishing, you know, etc. In any case, it can take a bit of time and effort to do so. You risk running into stray monsters, bandits, falling into a death trap that was designed for 1,000 years ago and you just happen to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an easy way to get rid of that and to reduce the amount of time and effort it takes. The interesting thing about the sleep spell is that there isn't a save. It just works, right? Because it affects a certain number of creatures within an area based on hit points. Well, casting sleep on a tree filled with critters or a lake full of fish, they will instantly just fall asleep. Fish will probably float up to the surface of the water. Critters in the trees will probably fall down. Your characters will never go hungry again, and you'll take all that joy of hunting from the ranger out of their sail. So, what do you guys think about this?
Useful if you don't have a ranger in the party. I'll just leave it at that.
I think, because like I've always kind of like known the sleep spell existed. I just, you know, it's like, it's just kind of there. Like, it's definitely like a spell. You kind of look at first glance, you're like, I could never see this being used because the, you know, you have to, it's the hit points, right? It's
right.
You have to roll for it. So
there's a chance you can get a really low roll. But
exactly. But when it comes to like, you know, critters and stuff, like they usually have like one, maybe 5 HP, maybe.
Right, right.
So like, this is definitely like a, oh, I never really thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I could point in the sky and make a bunch of birds fall.
I could totally see people using this to piss off their people at the table who enjoy this sort of thing. It is worth noting that the sleeping and or the eating and the food is something that gets overlooked a lot for a variety of different reasons. In some cases, it's just cumbersome. But if you're really running one of those post-apocalyptic survival style, you know, games, this will knock your dungeon master on their ass.
It's only going to send only big things at you.
Right, right. Like, yeah, you cast sleep and nothing rises to the surface. And you see just like triple humps appearing out of the water. Something's beat you there. So that's a pretty simple one. But once again, I think it was very cool. Ian, you want to take number four?
Safety net. The web spell. Obviously, at low levels, spell slots and no spells are kind of precious commodities. That means we can have spellcasters do think really hard about what you want. Featherfall is definitely pretty useful, especially since it can keep you alive when you fall down. It can turn a deadly drop into a slow fall and a mind-blowing visit, but sometimes it gotta compromise. The web spell can be useful in that regard. If a creature is concerned about the party falling into a horrible cavern of death, you can use the web spell to create a safety net, or even a bridge in general to protect the group crossing. Yeah, it could leave you in a sticky situation, but better than falling to your death, and it's a lot more versatile than Featherfall.
Yes. Oh my god, yes. Go ahead, Austin.
Does Featherfall only affect creatures?
I believe so, right? Don't know.
Because if it could affect, like, buildings and stuff, maybe, that could be kind of cool. But beyond that, yeah, for sure. Like,
creatures.
Just creatures? So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's worth noting that Featherfall does affect up to 5 falling creatures, and it just slows them, so there can be some give there. But as Ian mentioned, at low levels, those spell slots are precious. You know, the number of spells you know when you're limited, you got to really pick and choose what it is you're going to use. So in this case, keeping a web instead of a Featherfall for that one chance of dying from falling to death, this gives you a great alternative. What I also like about this is, as a player, you can use this to create your own, like, spider rope bridge across a big gap, or between buildings, or maybe you use it to block an exit so that the enemies, you know, can't go a certain way. So there's a lot. The web spell is just far more versatile and can still do the same thing that Featherfall does, depending on how far you're falling. Yes. It is worth noting that the web is an action, not a reaction like Featherfall. So if you have if you fall a shorter distance, you're probably not going to be able. Your DM may not let you use that action as a reaction. Yeah. Falling 10 feet, I probably wouldn't let somebody, you know, do that, but I think for Raw, an action is pretty quick enough that falling from a high height shouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's also worth mentioning, too, that you need something to anchor web onto as well.
Yes. Like, yeah, that's definitely a big sticking point. Just something to keep in mind. I really liked it. I thought this was a really nice one, and it can be more versatile. The bridge idea just is awesome, too.
Yeah, so that's a very good use of it. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. Austin, would you like to tell us about number 3?
Sure. Slippery when wet. Defog the windows. Create or destroy water. Always a good one. Create or destroy water is generally just used to ensure that the party has drinking water, in most cases. While there are some other limited uses, the fact the spell can be used to destroy fog in a 30-foot cube is no laughing matter. It's safe to assume this applies to things like cloud kill and other fog-like features in spells. It's worth noting that it has a range of 30 feet. This gives it a bit more versatility. If your characters are crossing a ledge or small beam and are being pursued, you can use Create Water to make it slick. This makes it significantly more difficult for a chasing enemy to cross the same as easy as you did. I could definitely see, like, you know, make the bridge wet and also just electrocute the bridge now. Just even, I like the idea that you can, like, destroy the fog, because fog is mainly, like, water vapor, isn't it? So I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
And the fact that it can expand to other more potent things like cloud kill makes it actually pretty versatile. And, you know, I mean, obviously fog already sucks because you can't see. And that can be a real simple way to overcome the visual impairment, or poisonous gas clouds, or can you think of any other, spells that might, be affected by the defogging of, the create or destroy water power?
Well, apparently according to Jimmy Crawford, not water elementals.
Well, that's a shame. Create or destroy water elementals. That's awesome. But unfortunately, it does not work.
Nope. It's like, it is a creature, not a... Not
source
water.
Of water. Yeah. What about, like, acid sprays and stuff like that? Like, poison liquids?
I could see an argument working for that.
I guess you could dilute
it DM
at worst, right? So you can, like, make it a lot less potent. But at best, you could just make it so it's just the raw poisonous material and not even, like, a liquidy poisonous material. I don't know.
Yeah, fun fact, the human body contains 14 gallons of water on average.
Fun fact, it has already been ruled that you can, in fact, not target somebody's blood. But nice try.
Yep. Oh, I know. This is, like I said, just fun fact.
So...
Okay.
Overall, this is a pretty surprising use for this. Honestly, I've never taken Create or Destroy Water, because I always thought it was kind of worthless. But...
In some cases it can be, yeah.
I mean, making it rain in a place is kind of nice, but... No, I don't know. That was definitely a use I wasn't expecting, especially when the enemies are chasing you and using it to make areas a little slicker. Now, I don't want to confuse it with, like, the grease spell that forced them to make a dex save, but I can totally see using it to impose disadvantage when they're crawling across a tightrope or a tiny little ledge that the player's characters just ran across. So
I could see that. I could see an argument, depending. Yeah.
Right.
Especially if there's enough water, it will, it should do something, ideally. But again, that's up to the DM as well, right? That's kind of like the big thing.
I think a lot of these uses depends on DM fiat in some regards.
Well, technically, the ones that are in that we've talked about that are actually in our notes fall within raw.
I did say
our additional comments definitely would fall under some DM fiat. But that's the point of the DM, right? The book isn't designed to cover every rule. So, number two, we're going to talk about the architect. Holy crap, wall of stone?
Uh-huh.
Blocking a passage or blocking the exit of a room with a conjured wall of stone is nice. Let's be honest, sometimes pulling that Edward Elric Full Metal Alchemist, you know, wall out of nowhere is just fantastic. But what about using it in your downtime to build homes, bridges, and other structures when you're not fighting the scourges of evil? Think about it. With Wall of Stone, if the caster manages to maintain concentration for only 10 minutes, the object becomes permanent. This can allow for lots of fun DIY projects around your town or city. Holy crap, I didn't know this, and it blew my mind when I was reading through the spell. What do you guys think?
Gens, I would imagine that quite a few dwarves are fans of this.
I would imagine.
It is worth noting that it is a fifth level spell, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, still, after 10 minutes, it's there. It's permanent. You can make monuments out of this stuff.
Well, and it makes me want to rethink the way the world is built and functions, because if there are casters that have access to this, can you imagine that your group, so your kingdom is under attack, and your local noble just found out that there's a city under siege in the east. So he sends all of these stone workers and spellcasters to build a wall that wasn't there before, and just in over like a period of like a week, an entire 6-inch stone wall is now blocking an army's path, and that totally can change the way different kingdoms do battle when those can just spring up out of nowhere and stay there.
Yep.
I also think that it could be nice as a DM to include little things like this in kind of the background, because we've all been in towns that have been being destroyed, and watching somebody walk up and, you know, channeling this energy and creating a stone wall that now is re-supporting a structure that otherwise would have caved in and fallen.
I see a lot of, there's a lot of, like, overworld stuff or, like, setting stuff you can do with this, for sure. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, so is this something you had ever thought of as a player?
I think I have once or twice, but I was playing a Forge Domain cleric, and we were getting ready for a siege, so it was definitely on brand at the time.
Right, right.
I didn't know that it stayed permanent afterwards.
Neither did
I. That was the thing that got me.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Because after knowing that, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I'm immediately wanting to play a Toph character now that this is, like, all they do. They just go around, like, at night, they just create a stone little building, and it just stays there. And so then somebody else ends up living them as like, recycling them as your adventure is wandering through the deadly forests.
Yep.
So, all right, Ian, would you like to tell us about number one?
Put powerful enemies to rest. We kind of touched on that earlier, but the sleep spell doesn't get a lot of attention. And we can do better. Like, by the time a creature is at low enough health to fall back into sleep, it's easier usually to just kill it. However, if the party is on a quest to capture a target, or they just want an easier battle, combine Polymorph with Sleep. Polymorph can turn a big, powerful monster into a squirrel, or a snail or something, with only a handful of hit points. Sleep only lasts a minute, so that snail would be locked up, buried alive, or tossed into a bag of holding or whatever.
Buried alive.
Yeah, we totally did this to a dragon at 1.1 game I played, so yeah.
This is one of those things that, if I didn't know about it going into the game, and a player did it, I would have to give them a standing ovation. Because there are a lot of monsters with legendary resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? It doesn't matter.
Nope.
Like, if the polymorph hits,
it's over.
It's over. Because there's no role to save them from the sleep. Now, you could extinguish several legendary reactions on, like, Polymorph, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But that is just, I mean, that's a two-part combo that really only requires you to succeed on one thing.
Yep.
And then it instantly applies. And that can totally bring the big bad down to their knees. Not to mention, there are a lot of strong monsters that don't have legendary resistance and can't automatically succeed.
Yeah.
So this makes this just,
the idea of just tossing into a bag of holding is crazy. It's gone. And then it's literally gone forever. You will never have to think about it again.
Well, not quite true.
They die, don't they?
With a polymorph, when they lose all their health, they revert back to their normal form. In our case, we had like a huge dragon inside a bag of holding, which is bigger than the space inside. So, no more bag of holding.
<That's
fair>. Exploded! Oh, that's great. But anyways, it definitely is an amazing way to over... I mean, I just cannot imagine... I just can't imagine how defeated a dungeon master would be if the players did this. Like, just like, that was... Do you have any idea how much time I spent building him? How much story I have? 16 pages of... I'm just going to leave him in a chest in the back.
Yeah, he'll be there for a minute.
All right, so that does it for our top five alternative ways to use Dungeons & Dragons spells. We do have some really cool honorable mentions that I think are worth touching on. I know, Austin, you talked about one in particular. Do you want to touch on that?
So banishment. It's a button that says, I'm out of here, pretty much. But banishment is usually used to prevent an enemy from joining combat by locking them in a demiplane. Yeah, it's pretty popular at our table because, I mean, literally just looking at a person and snapping your fingers and they're gone for a minute, pretty potent. Especially for I think it's a third level spell. It's pretty low level, I think, right?
Relatively.
Yeah.
I think fourth.
It might be fourth. I think you're right. But the point is, you do that, but if a player character ever finds themselves in a terrible situation on another plane, you know, like the planes of existence we talked about last episode, you can use this spell kind of like, you know, a pair of ruby red slippers and send yourself back to the material plane. You can just, I'm out, I'm leaving. And since it's your own spell, you can succeed at your own spell.
And this is something that would never have occurred to me when they were in Avernus. And they were on this other plane of existence. And if they were in such a bad situation, two of you were paladins, right?
Yeah.
You totally could have saved everybody from certain death just by saying, Hey, do you want to go back to the material plane? Yep. Boop. You're back. Like, think about all the trouble. Think about all the trouble you guys went to get back. To try to get back, and then you could have just used one of your own spells to do it. Like, well, that just is mind-blowing, isn't it?
I don't think paladins get actually access to banishment, do they?
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
According to D&D Beyond, they do.
Wow. Yep.
So that just, this is a really, really cool little tip.
Yeah, they do.
our paladins aren't high enough. That's okay. Works
yeah,
in your favor.
We weren't really as high as we needed to be for there.
So... I thought that was a really good one, and is a very clever way to use it. The one I want to talk about is the reduce and enlarge spell. If you don't know, this second level spell basically can let you reduce a target size in half in all dimensions, and its weight by 1/8 of normal. This reduction in size decreases, you know, it by one category. The halfling, and most common halflings, are about 3 feet tall and weigh 30 to 35 pounds. So if you reduce them, by well within the weight limit of something such as
Mage Hand.
So if you are a halfling wizard, you can reduce yourself and then use Mage Hand to float around long before you would get access to the fly spell. Like, that just is... so much fun, and it applies to other creatures and stuff, and you can basically pick them up, and this little hand, just like one of those old video games, you just pick them up, move them wherever you want, giving you access to flight, and I just think that is an awesome use of those two powers.
What level is enlarge reduce?
2.
Okay.
Second.
Yeah.
So you can get it really, really early. And of course, Mage Hand's a cantrip, so this can work really, really well.
Yeah, surprisingly. Wow.
All right, this one came from personal experience. Make them regret it. Heat metal. If an enemy creature grapples you and you're wearing metal armor, you can make them pay for it by casting heat metal on yourself. Especially if you're resist or even immune to fire damage.
Yes. Did you do this with your cleric or somebody else?
My Forged Domain cleric, yeah.
Yep. So that's awesome, because then you get them into a bear hug and they can't escape.
Yeah.
So I really do like that. Obviously, it works specifically if you're immune to... Is the Forged Domain cleric immune to fire?
They eventually become immune to it, but they resist a lot sooner.
Yeah.
So that's nice. So you can easily add that damage on top of whatever beatdown you're giving them while you got them grappled.
I guess you could also heat their armor, too, and just kind of toast them inside it, if they're grappled.
That's assuming they're even wearing metal armor in the first
place.
I think that's the most common use, is to heat their weapon, heat their armor. But I don't know that I've seen anybody heat themselves and then just try to, you know, bear hug. Because heat metal will only target like one enemy, but anybody that's attacking you is going to suffer the risk of the heat metal, right?
Yep. Level 6, resist fire. Level 17, immune to fire.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So,
okay.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for our 8 alternative ways to use Dungeons & Dragons spells. If there's anything that we haven't mentioned that you really loved, please let us know in the comments and tag us if you can. We really enjoy these sorts of brain breakers, I guess, where you break away from the tradition of way it's supposed to work and change it up a little bit. Before we move on to our Unearthed Tips and Tricks, I'd like to just take a moment to say Whitaker's Well of Wondrous Magic Items is now available in Softcover, an easy D100 table to randomly generate magic items for your 5th edition of the world's greatest role-playing game. That's D&D. The Softcover is available through DriveThruRPG right now. You can head on over to CritAcademy.com and grab it in our shop. Thank you to everyone that keeps picking up our stuff so we can invest more money to make them, you know, PDFs and print. And you guys are awesome. We keep making more products because you keep, you know, buying the stuff that we put out there. And we appreciate that.
Yeah. Helps us a lot.
And now, what you've all been waiting for. Our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
our character cast up today is Bullhide Steelfist. She is a mite stocky and dresses well, wearing black shirts, loose pants, and blazers most of the time. Her auburn hair is waving and long, and she has several tiny ruby earrings on each ear. Personality-wise, she has a good heart, but also a terrible temper. Hence the Steelfist in the last name, I guess. She also will forgive often, but not before yelling and berating someone for whatever they have done wrong. She has a habit of throwing herself into exceedingly dangerous situations. As part of her history, she's a child of a sellsword who enjoy hunting. Bullhild has taken on many hunting expeditions herself. She was a friend to animals and a trickster. In her defense of animals, however, she would do severe harm to people. She now mingles around in high society. That's an interesting clash. And her motivation is money and treasure, and she is compelled to act according to her religious beliefs. Definitely a wild card up with this one, don't we have?
Yeah. Oh, and I think that's something that we get so caught up in the tropes of certain things that we kind of just stick with them and not thinking about, you know, mixing and matching different things. So the idea, normally when you think somebody who's a lover of animals, they're sweet and kind, but this person will backhand you without hesitation. What do you think, Austin?
I mean, sometimes the animals do just like, I mean, a dog might like you, but, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean that the humans have to.
I suppose.
So, I don't know, I like it. I think it's, it breaks the mold a little bit, and that doesn't happen all the time. So, that's, yeah. I like that.
I like the little details, too.
I like how this person is, relatively nice for the most part, but, you do something dumb and they'll let you know.
That's how it goes, I guess.
Sometimes.
All right, I think that'll do it for our character concept. Bullhild Steelfist. Our monster variant of the episode is the Monk of Elements. I really had a lot of fun with this one. So the origin is you're going to start with the vampire spawn. The features you're going to drop are the regeneration, the spider climb, the vampire weaknesses, claws, bite, and multi-attack. We're going to give her a whole host of new features to fit this way of the elements kind of style of play. First, you're going to give them evasion. This means that if they're subjected to a dexterity saving throw to only take half damage, instead they take no damage and only half on a failed. That's dangerous. We're also going to give it innate spellcasting. Wisdom is its spellcasting modifier, DC 14, plus 5 to hit. The monk can innately cast the following spells requiring no components. All spells are cast at second level. Three times a day, they can cast Burning Hands, Earth Tremor, Ensnaring Strike, though you're going to reflavor that as water, Gust of Wind, and of course, Jump, because, you know, that's what they do. They jump a lot. Yep. We're going to give it a rechargeable ability called Patient Defense. Recharges on a 5 or 6. The monk takes the dodge action as a bonus action. We are going to give it multi-attack for 3 attacks, 1 with its quarterstaff and 2 unarmed. Its quarterstaff does 1d8 plus 4 bludgeoning damage. Its unarmed strikes do 1d6 plus 4. The other powers we're going to give it is reactions, deflect missiles. Guess what that does? It allows it to deflect the missile, reducing the damage by 11. If it does reduce the damage to 0, it can catch it and use its action, part of its action to throw it back. It deals 1d8 plus 3 piercing damage, and its range is 40 to 80 feet. Cool. What do you guys think about this little monk of elements, way of the elements that doesn't suck?
Yeah,
I was gonna say it's a way of elements, monk. That doesn't suck. Great. I like it. I mean, I could see this like, being like an NPC, like in like a monastery or something, right? Just kind of like doing things or kind of like living in the mountains, maybe even. I could see this.
Absolutely, Ian.
Well, as we already firmly established, it's the way of the elements monk that doesn't suck.
We really got to drive that point home. It's a way of elements monk that doesn't suck.
Right, yeah. Right.
it's an archetype we want it to be awesome, but it isn't, unfortunately.
I like the versatility of it. I mean, you've got the straight up damage if you want to go with the Burning Hands attack. By the way, if you're going to play the Monk of the Elements, Burning Hands doesn't come out of your hands. Do like a karate kick or something. Something other than what the wizard's going to do, because it's just lame that way. Think Avatar, right? With the Fire Nation people, you know? The Earth Tremor is really cool because it gives you a movement impairing ability by knocking all the creatures prone. Which is great because it's all the creatures, not just one creature in a 10-foot. Mm-hmm. So I imagine them stomping on the ground and the whole area just shaking. Or you can get really fancy and they could hold up one finger and smash the single finger and then send a tremor out. That would be badass.
Yeah.
Of course, then you're going to top it off with the water whip, the quote-unquote ensnaring strike that strikes movement entirely, and gust of wind that knocks things down, and the jump lets it jump really high. So overall, it's designed to be a very versatile enemy, whether it's an ally, an enemy is up to you as the dungeon master, but it's simple, it's straightforward. It's really fun if you've got somebody who likes to use weaker ranged attacks. Because the idea of having the enemy just capture it and throw it back is something that doesn't happen enough. And I think more creatures need to have that feature aside from just the monks.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. So, do you guys have anything else on this?
Weaker range attacks. I wonder if that takes into account the sneak attack from a range attack from a rogue.
If they can see it, right? It's all that matters.
Yeah, but usually...
They won't catch it, though.
Yeah,
it just reduces the damage.
It would have to be an unseen attacker, I think, for it to...
It says
in response to getting hit by a ranged weapon. So that's a good question. I don't know.
I can never figure out the interaction.
That's interesting.
That's something I would assume because if they're just getting hit by it, then yeah, that's the only thing that's the only restriction. So I don't know.
Right.
It's a good point.
Austin, would you like to tell us about our encounter?
Sure. So our encounter is a lost treasure. Young Isabel de Grey, a young female commoner, has dropped a precious trinket into a wishing well by mistake. When the characters stumble upon her at the well, or she goes in search of help, they learn she has prayed to the fairy of the well. The locals believe the fairy to be a benevolent being, as tales say those who make a wish upon the well may have it come true. That sounds like a gin. I don't like this. believing this, Isabel approached to make a wish, planning to toss a family coin in, but she slipped and a barret given to her by her now past great grandmother fell in. Excuse me. Upon her request, the fairy of the well makes a request of the young maiden. She must
first.
Did
you not know what a barret was?
No, I don't. That's okay, though. We're going to skip past it.
Okay.
I'm in the middle. She must first seek out fresh mandrake root from the base of the waterfall to the west. A successful DC 17 nature check is required to harvest it correctly. A character proficient with the herbalism kit has advantage on this check. Should the harvesting fail, the mandrake root juice sprays into their eyes and suffers the effect of the sight rot in the DMG disease. Upon returning, the characters offer up the mandrake root into the well. Among completion, the fairy thanks the efforts of the maiden and her adventurers. The voice from the well calls out, "Young maiden, do you wish to have your trinket returned to you? If so, then I have another request to make you."
Greedy bastard.
Yeah, of course. To the north of the lake that this well is connected, there lives a dangerous beast. It threatens me and my kin. Slay this beast and bring it back its tail as proof. Offer its tail to me and I'll return your trinket. Great. The beast in question is a... Oh, okay. Plesiosaurus?
Plesiosaurus.
Is it a Leosaurus? Okay.
Plesiosaurus?
Okay. I don't know names, apparently. The characters must succeed in a DC 15 wisdom survival check to track and locate the beast. Upon returning, the fairy of the well makes a one last request and asks for the maiden's hand. Appearing from the well is a small but well-dressed goblinoid Nilpok.
not a
fairy.
The gin would have been good, though.
With cackling and laughing, if she declines, he takes the collection and the trinket and attempts to escape.
What do you guys think about this?
I didn't expect a goblin at the end of this adventure.
Talk about a little drifting action going on here.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, man.
That's...
Yeah.
I could have expected a fairy. I could have expected a djinn. Didn't expect a goblin.
The Nilbog are in the Volo's Guide to Monsters, and they're little trickster bastards.
Yep.
And when I read that, I'm just like, okay, well, what can we do?
I could have also expected a kobold. Yeah. Could have seen that too. but a Nilbog definitely works.
The nice little touch that I liked about this was the harvesting of the mandrake root causes sight rot. If you don't know, that is a savage disease in the DMG that causes painful infections within the eyes and eventually leads to the player going blind. And it can only be removed by spells such as lesser restoration or heal. So...
Oh boy!
Yeah, what's weird is it like you only start with like a -1 of penalty, but at the end of a long rest, after the symptoms appear, the penalty worsens, and you have to continue to make saves until and it gets progressively worse till when it reaches a -5, the victim is blinded until their sight is restored entirely. So once you fail the save, you're boned. There's no like at the end of a rest, you get a save. Nope.
You just have to get it taken care of quick.
She's like, sorry, dude, we can't, we don't have enough money to pay for your blindness to be removed, and, you're slowing us down, man.
The fighter's gonna take, blind fighting really quick.
overall, do you guys have any other comments? Something you liked about it? Something you'd have seen done differently?
The plot twist at the end was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah, I love the plot twist at the end. I think that's probably the most exciting part, is just the fact that... Oh, nope, it was Goblin the whole time.
All right. That'll do it for our encounter of the podcast, A Lost Treasure. Ian, would you like to tell us about our magic item today?
Our magic item today comes from Midgard Hero's Handbook, the Elkhorn Rod. It's a wand, rare, requires attunement by a spellcaster. This rod is fashioned from an elk or reindeer horn. Side note, they're actually antlers, not horn. And is marked by the Elder's Jizz Rune. As an action, its wielder can grant a +1 on saving throws against spells and magical effects to the target touched by the wand, including him or herself. The bonus lasts for one round. If the Elkhorn Rod is held when performing the somatic components of Dispel Magic or comparable stuff, it grants a +1 bonus on the caster's spellcasting ability check.
Very cool.
Yep.
I like that. What did you say about antlers?
Basically, reindeer or elk don't have horns. They have antlers.
according to thesaurus.com, horn is a synonym for antler. Suck it!
I
feel like there's more to it than that, but hey. I've also seen dictionaries called glaive sword, so...
Fair enough. What do you guys think about this?
It's handy. I mean, anything that... That boost saving throws for magical effects, especially like dispel magic in this case, or comparable stuff, so I guess this could count as maybe with counterspell as well, too, actually. I could see someone arguing that.
Ooh, yeah, I can see that.
This is a very, like, from what I gather, a very utility based kind of magic item, which I'm a lot more happy with. I'm not like, yeah, cool, more damage out of your weapons is fun, but like getting like additional stuff beyond that is really where like the item shines. And in this case, that would be the when performing somatic component of dispel magic or comparable magic. I think that's really cool. I like that a lot.
Little subtle things like this. The reason I grabbed this is because I like magic items that are flavor, but also help the character succeed. Kind of what you just said. Something that's just not outright damage. Because as a player, there's nothing worse than casting a spell and then it just utterly not doing anything. Like, that is single-handedly one of the crappiest feelings as a player. I cast command! He shrugs it off. Doesn't even listen. You know, that's just kind of, I mean, obviously the description of it makes a difference too, you know, describing him kind of fighting and resisting it, it has a little more to it, but man.
Or like Blink where you literally just fail, I think. Yes. There's like a 50% chance it just doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
You just wasted like a third or fourth level spell slot.
Right.
For nothing. Yeah, that's, I always thought that was like really polarizing, and it's like, man, that just sucks. It feels so bad. The effect is great, but I mean, like, it's a 50. It's still a coin toss whether or not it works, so it's just, ugh.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, I looked it up. Horns are not antlers.
Okay.
It's a synonym according to thesaurus.com.
It's wrong. And antlers are made from the same substance as bone. Well, horns are made from the same substance as your fingernails.
Oh. Okay. I could see. Yeah, I could
There's way more to it than that, but I'm just going to leave it at that. Moving on.
Okay. Do you want me to take the Dungeon Master tip?
I'm just waiting for him to say, suck it!
Or do you want to take the Dungeon Master?
You can take it.
All right. Dungeon Master tip. Bardly.io. Written and mastered by our award-winning composer, our tracks are designed specifically for use in tabletop role-playing adventures. No awkward pauses or distracting sounds. Organize your music however you see fit. We offer a full customization for your playlists. You can even import your own tracks.
Yes.
And it offers an easy-to-use progressive web app that you can use any modern mobile device with.
So, if anybody had watched our one of our episodes of our Initiative and Intrigue that we recently that we had done, there's music playing in the background. And at first, it's pretty common to have music playing in the background for D&D.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really cool is the way it's done is the players can open up a link and it plays in their browser separate from whatever the DM is doing. So because of that, you can set your own levels, and that to me was a big deal, because I've had a lot of games, especially online, where I play it what I think is nice low and low, but other people it's too loud or they can't hear it. And having it in one good quick place that's not Roll 20 was awesome, because normally I just have everything playing in the background through like Roll 20 or something. This gives another alternative, and I thought it was really, really well done. So that's a pretty straightforward, quick one. Definitely check out Bardly.io if you like to add music to your, you know, D&D games and stuff. So
there's in line with this, actually, there's even like, if you search up like YouTube videos of like these like hour long, like I think there's one that's just like, it just like marketplace effects or something like that, where it's just like, it's just people like talking and you hear like carriages being like rolled around and whatnot. It's literally just like ambient noise of just like a town's place. You can definitely do stuff like that too.
Nice, for sure. All right, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, bardly.io. Our player tip of the podcast is
don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by forcing your enemy to comply. So it can be difficult to get an enemy to confess or share secrets with heroes. While special effects such as Charm Person and Suggestion allow them to become allies and more willing to assist you, it isn't always enough. Now, tossing up a Zone of Truth spell with any of these features will not only compel them to answer your questions, but now they must do so truthfully. Even the simple command spell becomes far more powerful when a question is asked in the Zone of Truth. While they may not be forced to reveal it with like the Charm Person or the Suggestion by getting around it with, you know, half-truths, a simple word under the command spell, comply, can force even the most unwilling to reveal everything they know, even if it will put their lives in danger. I don't know if you recall, but Charm Person and Suggestion says they won't do anything that basically puts them in danger. Well,
command
the command spell does not have, yes, it does not. So in a situation like this, it instantly becomes more potent than the ones that most people use, even though it's under a single word.
Command is a powerful spell in general. I find lots of uses for that one.
So,
I think one time with the command spell specifically, we were in the Avernus and we were doing that whole like Mad Max thing where we're kind of like driving around doing a whole like death race or whatever. Yeah. I told one of the guys in one of their vehicles, I said, jump. And he was like, shit. So he jumped and he went flying.
That's funny.
That was pretty good. I like command. Command's fun.
What do you think? What do you think, Ian?
I like the interaction between the two of these, and you can definitely get a lot of use out of it if you know what you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's funny because I feel like all the spells go out of their way to limit the danger aspect, but with one word, that I imagine Watsy's just like, oh, what can they do with one word?
That's when players are like pulling up like the dictionary and they're like, does this work?
Comply is definitely a very, very good one.
I didn't ever think of the word comply. That's a good one. Yeah. Or surrender is a good one.
Yeah, but that only lasts for like a second.
Yeah,
right?
But they all last for like a second, technically.
Yeah, technically, I suppose. But they can change their mind really quick. You can't undo information you shared.
Although it is worth noting that a lot of the spells in 5th edition are nerfed compared to some past edition counterparts.
So. Right, for sure. Do you guys have any other points on this?
Nope. Oh, this actually went really well with our whole alternative uses for using spells.
You can almost say it was on point, right?
It's on brand. We did it.
All right, that'll do it for our show today. Before we close out today, as always, we have more fat loot to give away. Compliments of our generous sponsors.
All right, our fat loot today is Tomb of the Twilight Queen from MT Black. Centuries ago, the Twilight Queen reigned over the most powerful empire in the world. But now her realm lies in ruins. Her people scattered, and her remains are buried in the grand tomb full of deadly traps and marvelous secrets. And I'm guessing not necessarily in that order. A renowned scholar has hired you to enter the tomb in search of a fabled artifact. But you will need all of your courage and ingenuity, especially that one, to survive.
Especially that one. Ingenuity. Gotta need it.
And our winner today is... Sea Desert Fox. And if you didn't win, not a problem. Head over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe for your chance to win and find a bunch of other free stuff we give away.
Yes, we do a lot of giveaways. A lot.
Yep. Yeah, we do.
Before we close out, I just want to give another call to action or reminder. If you're interested in checking out our upcoming Kickstarter, Capes and Crooks, it is going live on June 29th. You can head on over to CritAcademy.com/CapesAndCrooks, and there's a little paperwork you can subscribe to and get notified. If it is something you want to support, please consider supporting within the first 24 hours, as that is the most critical for algorithm purposes and helping us reach more people to ensure this is one of our biggest projects yet, because we're basically not making three books, the Monster Manual, the Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Player Book. We're putting it all into one, so it's going to be big, including, you know, the setting stuff. So we'll take all the support we can get. If you've already got our memorable monsters, you can expect the quality to even be above and beyond that. So I'm super excited.
Yep.
All right, that'll do it for our show today. Please join us on our next episode. We'll be discussing the top 5 most versatile D&D classes.
And if you enjoy the show and want to support us, visit us at CritAcademy.com. Follow us on social media. Find us on YouTube. Our YouTube shorts are going great, I think.
Yes.
Pretty sure they still are. And feel free to leave us a review on iTunes, even if you... don't have an iTunes account, it's really easy to go and make one, and if you give us a good review, it's great because it helps everything that we do. So, and it's free. It's all free. Reviews are free, and it helps us a lot.
Yes. Yes.
A little goes a long way.
Yes.
I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes. Thank you.
I like that, was it Andrew in the chat said, poop is a good one, because who wants to fight with heavy pants? You just use the command spell to tell them to poop. I thought that was really funny.
I missed that.
I didn't want to say it on the show, because I was like, ah, we're pretty past that point now, but I just couldn't. Yeah. I saw it, I was like, oh man, that's awesome.